Today, central banks in Wonderland as RBNZ holds two. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is post covering finance and problem news. Well, after the RBA's hold decision on Tuesday, we got a hold from the Reserve Bank in New Zealand too, following on from the Fed and other central banks around the world. The New Zealand Monetary Policy Committee reached consensus to hold the official cash rate at 3.25%. They said that annual consumer price inflation will likely increase towards the top of the Monetary Policy Committee's 1-3% target band over the middle of 2025. But with spare productive capacity in the economy and declining domestic inflation pressures, headline inflation is expected to remain in the band and return to around 2% by early 2026. But they added that elevated export prices and lower interest rates are supporting a recovery in the New Zealand economy, but heightened global policy uncertainty and tariffs are expected to reduce global economic growth. This will likely slow the pace of New Zealand's economic recovery, reducing inflationary pressures. But to stress the point, they said that the economic outlook remained highly uncertain. Further data on the speed of New Zealand's economic recovery, the persistence of inflation, and the impacts of tariffs will influence the future path of the official cash rate. If medium-term inflation pressures continue to ease, as projected, the committee expects to lower the official cash rate further. ASB said of the decision in their economic note that the record of meeting showed the on-hold decision was the consensus view, implying a unanimous vote. The RBNZ acknowledged that the New Zealand economy has evolved broadly in line with the May MPS projections. Despite higher frequency indicators suggesting weaker than expected growth in April and May, the current level of economic activity was broadly consistent with the committee's judgment in May. Now, they had expected the RBNZ to acknowledge some concern over the potential short-term spike in inflation, and the record of the meeting noted that New Zealand inflation was expected to rise toward the top of the MPC's inflation target band by the end of 2025. However, this inflation spike is expected to be short-lived, with the Reserve Bank of New Zealand adjudging that significant spare capacity in the economy would act to further reduce domestic inflation pressures, with inflation expected to return to around the middle of the band by early 2026. And the Reserve Bank of New Zealand will need to be confident that the higher short-term inflation does not risk stoking inflation expectations and causing a longer-lasting inflation headache. This proved extremely difficult for the bank to re-anchor in the previous cycle. And they noted that the Reserve Bank will be closely monitoring readings from inflation expectation surveys in the coming months for signs of whether near-term inflation readings are likely to recede. Core inflation readings from the Reserve Bank of New Zealand suite of core inflation measures will also be closely scrutinised. It will likely take a marked uplift for both to dissuade the Reserve Bank of New Zealand from cutting the OCR ahead. Given that the outlook was broadly consistent with the May MPS view, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand maintained an explicit easing bias, noting that if medium-term inflation pressures continue to ease as predicted, the committee expects to lower the official cash rate further. This suggests a 25 basis point August cut is the most likely course of action, with the MPS in May flagging a 25 basis point cut in the third quarter. Now, they don't buy into the view that holding the OCR now will preclude the Reserve Bank of New Zealand from cutting again if needed. The global scene remains of concern, as does the sluggishness of households' demand, with both expected to dampen medium-term inflationary pressures in New Zealand. The ASB's base case is that a cautious data and event-dependent RBNZ will cut the OCR by 25 basis points in August, with the OCR ending the year at 3%. Developments can change quickly, of course, and the policy path delivered by the Reserve Bank of New Zealand will change to reflect that. Over at ANZ, they see the pause as temporary too, writing that their view on today's decision was that the recent soft data justified another 25 basis point cut, but that lingering concerns about upside inflation risks would on balance see the committee decide to hold the OCR unchanged, awaiting more CPI and inflation data. as well as more evidence on whether the recovery is losing steam or just hitting a pothole. That's pretty much how it all unfolded. So they expect to see that the data will assuage inflation concerns sufficiently to see the Reserve Bank of New Zealand delivering a 25 basis point cut in August. And the statement also flagged a clear easing bias, noting that subject to medium-term inflation pressures continuing to ease in line with the committee's central projections, the committee expects to lower the official cash rate further. Overall, the outcome was in line with their expectations, and their base case remains for a 25 basis point cut in August, November, and February, taking the terminal rate to 2.5%. Now, of course, the big difference between Australia and New Zealand is that across the ditch, they took rates higher, caused a recession, cut migration, and cut rates by 225 basis points versus the RBA's miserly 50 basis points. But as I discussed yesterday, the massive rise in migration in Australia and the boom in non-market jobs, especially into the government-funded bedpan economic sector, which of course is important but not necessarily economically productive, explains the different path. In fact, despite the low inflation track in Australia relative to other economies, the government policy choices continues to keep rates higher than they would otherwise be. The other catch, of course, is that the official inflation rate diverges from the lived experience of many households, as the latest Domain rental report highlights. As this article reveals, experts warn that Sydney's rental crisis is exacerbating homelessness and pushing home ownership out of reach, as rents hit record highs. Asking prices for a typical Sydney house hit $780 a week after rising 2.8% or $21 a week over the year to June. The median asking rent for units hit $740. That's a 2.8% increase of $20 a week in the same period. And the vacancy rate remains tight at 1.1%, below the 1.2% over the year prior. Actually, around 3% would represent a balance between landlords and tenants. Domain's Chief of Research and Economics, Nicola Powell, said rents are still at a record high in Sydney and rising, and the core difference is we're now starting to see stronger rates of growth for units compared to houses. Actually, Domain went on to say that some city suburbs were recording a lull in rents, even as property prices take off again, as cash-trapped tenants curb landlords' ability to push rents higher. While rents are at a record high in most state capital cities, the pace of increase in most city suburbs has slowed, stalled, and in some cases reversed. Tenants have been through a tumultuous 5 years, marked by a period of rapid rent hikes from 2021 to 2023. While the pace of increases has now moderated, rents remain at elevated levels. Domain data shows that the median rent asking price for houses, measuring all suburbs across all state capital cities, did not change over the past 12 months, remaining at $650. For units, the median rent increased 3.2% to $650, compared to $630 a year ago. Chris Martin, a housing policy expert and senior research fellow at UNSW City Futures Research Centre, said renters had endured extreme increases in recent years. Many had just about as much as they can take, he said. We are kind of on the other side of those big increases, but rents are still up and people are still doing it very tough. He went on to say that many tapped out renters were unable to handle further rent hikes, testing landlords' resolve to push prices higher. The slowing rate of rent increases has also been linked to several other factors, including new laws in some states determining how and when rents can be raised, along with stronger protection against evictions. As property prices rise again, investors are also being persuaded to buy back at auctions, leading to more rentals hitting the market in sought-after locations, putting some downward pressure on prices. In fact, the Sydney suburbs of Enmore, Forestville, and South Hurstville were among those to record annual falls in apartment rent prices, while house rents dropped in several high-end locations, including Edgecliff, Bondi Junction, and Cammeray. Unit rents in Melbourne City were flat over the year, but fell in Ivanhoe East, while house rents dropped in several suburbs, including Glen Iris. Perth's rent market has remained very tight, with high-end City Beach and Mossman Park among a small number of suburbs to record a fall in house rental prices. Now, over in New Zealand, property prices and rents are falling, and Canada has also shown how policy options shape rates and home prices. Canada experienced an unprecedented immigration boom after the pandemic, which caused a record housing shortage. As a result, Canada's rental vacancy rate fell to a record low, and rental inflation soared, delivering the worst rental crisis in living memory. The National Bank of Canada estimates that the nation had a shortage of rental housing exceeding 450,000 units. Yet things have changed following the Canadian government's immigration freeze. Canada's Liberal government admitted that immigration had been too high, and they implemented an immigration population freeze aimed at stabilizing the population at its current level for 3 years. The immigration freeze has proven effective, with Canada's quarterly population growth plunging to only 20,100 in the second quarter of 2025. Only two other quarters in history have shown weaker population growth, during the pandemic in 2020, when border restrictions prevented any growth, and in 2015. Annual population growth remained solid at 1.24%, which is just over 510,000 people in the second quarter of 2025, but it is less than half the pace of the peak back in 2023. Meanwhile, Canadian housing starts remained roughly stable, actually down 700 in May, at 279,500 seasonally adjusted and annualized. As a result, Canada's housing shortage and rental crisis are easing. Indeed, slow population growth has driven 8 consecutive monthly declines in Canadian asking rents, which are tracking 3.3% below a year earlier. The easing in rents this year across most parts of the country is a positive for housing affordability in Canada, following a period of extremely strong rent inflation lasting from 2022 to 2024, according to the Urbanation president, Sean Hillebrand. My point is this, that government policy really matters, and wrong settings lead to higher interest rates and higher inflation. And given the wider global uncertainties from tariffs and Trump, it is more important than ever for Labour to change tack in Australia. Yet, they appear to be doubling down, which will lead to higher rates for longer. They should ease immigration and dial back spending into the public sector, not simply looking for ways to drive the tax take higher. But they won't, which leaves the RBA in an impossible position, which in turn piles the heat onto many households in the rental sector, and also those with mortgages too, as I discussed in my earlier show. Frankly, Labour has become more doctrinal and more disconnected from real people than I could have ever imagined. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.